The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Now I'll be happy to take your questions. Zeke, the Associated Press. How about Yamiche? So the best way to get something done, if you hold near and dear to you that you like to be able to, anyway, we're going to get a lot done. Okay, hang on. Sorry. Oh, Sing Ming, Ms. Kim. Let me get here. Okay. Cecilia Vega.
So, sir, you blame the last administration, but is your messaging in saying that these children are and will be allowed to stay in this country and work their way through this process, encouraging families like Joselle's to come?
Well, look. The idea that I'm going to say, which I would never do, okay, Kristen.
And what is your red line on North Korea?
Let me say that, number one, UN Resolution 1718 was violated by those particular missiles that were tested. Number one, we're consulting with our allies and partners, and there will be responses if they choose to escalate. Okay, hang on a second here. Kristen, Nancy, CBS. Where am I here? Let me see. Caitlin, we have somewhere, I asked the staff to write it down for me, and they did, not for this, but for a longer discussion. We have somewhere, in terms of infrastructure, we rank 13th globally in infrastructure. And I think that I got one more question here. And Janet from Univision.
Well, no, treating the root causes in Latin America doesn't change things overnight. How do you realistically and physically keep these families from coming to the U.S. when things will not get better in their countries right away?
Well, I can't guarantee that, but I know, you know, that old thing, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. This is a... But I'm ready to work with any Republican who wants to help solve the problem and make the situation better. But folks, I'm going. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I apologize. That was painfully long and boring. That was a 3-minute montage of Joe Biden's very first press conference. Maybe I bored you so that I would come on and feel a lot more exciting and energetic for you. That contrast, the side by side there. Remember how long this was? Just less than 4 years ago, when Biden came in, he was inaugurated, and everybody's, when's he going to give the press conference? Because there were a lot of questions about his age heading into that election, and then they went months before he would talk to anybody. The date on that clip, March 25th, 2021, I remember watching that live, and I was shocked because He had a pre-selected list of journalists who he was going to ask questions. He didn't look out at the audience. He just read from a list the name and who they worked for. That was unusual. It was unprecedented, pre-selecting reporters for the press conference, for their questions. And then he had all the note cards. If you watch that clip, you can see points where he's shuffling through them. And he has the binder so he could read answers to those questions. And then he has the moment where he again, his brain freezes up. And then he just randomly walks away from the lectern and then has to walk back. If you weren't watching, you'll hear it when the audio dips out because he's walked away from the lectern. And the reporters just sitting there quietly, letting it happen. The same reporters who would scream and holler at Donald Trump for an hour long just sat there like little puppies, just sitting there listening to the master speak. This is no surprise. What happened on Thursday last week, this is the 1 week anniversary. We're pre-recording this show. If you're watching it, this is being played on Thursday, July 4th. 1 week ago, suddenly the media is surprised and shocked by Joe Biden's age. What every normal American citizen has been viewing for the last 4 years, the media act like it just came out of nowhere on June 28th. Of last week, or maybe that was June 27th. And here we are. This is 4 years of the media propping him up, acting like nothing was wrong. And for all of us, what happened on that debate stage was what has been happening, was what the media told you was a cheap fake. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily, by the way. Like I mentioned, we're pre-recording this show in advance. Today, if you're watching, is the 4th of July. A happy 4th of July to all of you. If you are watching, you can send any comments to td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks again for joining us. I wanted to start again with that clip to show you the contrast. This is the same media that Donald Trump walked down the wet ramp slowly, and that was weeks of coverage about the 25th Amendment, how he needed to be taken out of office. And now they're talking about removing him from the campaign. Let's talk about him being the president for the next 7 months. Again, the media, they're the ones that have egg on their face. Again, another lie, another hoax. The Biden is fine hoax. This was Jill Abramson. She used to be an editor for the New York Times, and she wrote this just scathing article about how the media failed to cover Joe Biden's cognitive decline. Jill Abramson, again, New York Times editor, former New York Times editor. She writes, "It's clear the best news reporters in Washington have failed in the first duty of journalism, to hold power accountable. It is our duty to poke through White House smoke screens and find out the truth. The Biden White House clearly succeeded in a massive cover-up of the degree of the president's feebleness and his serious physical decline, which may simply be the result of old age. Shame on the White House press corps for not to have pierced the veil of secrecy surrounding the president." What? We've all seen it. There isn't a cover-up. That's not necessary. You see it when he's walking to Marine One. You see it when they make the change and have all of the aides surround him as he walks from the helicopter because they're worried about him tripping and stumbling. They don't want the optics of that. For 4 years, it was the New York Times who said, "Don't believe your lying eyes." And here she comes and said, "We were caught off guard by this. We had no idea. The White House, this was a cover-up. And we just took their word for it. They said he was fine. We saw no signs of it." And then this just hit us. June 27th, that debate just came out of nowhere. She writes, "Obviously, the president's decline was a super hard story to report, even by those who wanted to get it, like the Wall Street Journal. Their story did not deliver, using mostly named GOP sources." It leaves you speechless to think about these people. I've not really interacted in person with any of these people. I cannot imagine somebody who could write something like that. Poorly sourced. Why do you need sources? Why do you need to talk to Republican congressmen? Why do you need to talk to people in the room? Oh, we got to have our firsthand sources. We can all see it. And they tell you, no, no, no. What you saw, you're not allowed to, that has no credibility. I mean, it's just your eyes. I mean, you saw it yourself. You can't trust that. You have to trust what we tell you to believe. I mean, it's shocking how these people think. And it's hard to believe. I just wonder, they must know that we know, or they just think that the public is so dumb, or they're just doing it to make themselves feel better about themselves. They've got to reassure themselves, hey, I'm an honest journalist. I just reported what the White House told me to report. It's like Ben Rhodes said, they're the blob. They're a bunch of young 20-somethings, and they don't want to jeopardize their careers, so they have to move as a unit. You're not allowed to move away from that because you don't want to risk offending somebody in the Beltway, because they will go after you if you report the truth. So you move with the blob. Don't break away from the blob. It doesn't matter if you know what you're reporting is false. Everyone else is saying it. And that is why, after that debate, now they can talk about it, because they're all saying it at the same time. They all have their jobs protected. They're not going to get fired for that because they're not out of line anymore. Well, what changed? CNN says Biden's mental fitness could have been better covered leading up to the debate, some White House reporters acknowledge. So several White House reporters told CNN that the coverage of Biden's age and his mental stamina could have pushed harder. They cited several difficulties in doing so before the debate, from the obvious political motivations of sources who either want to protect Biden's image or project a certain image, to the blowback from pursuing such reports, especially from the White House and Democrats. I mean, this pursuing such reports, these are the journalists. They went to Columbia. I mean, I could do that from my computer chair. Do you need a source inside the White House to tell you he's struggling mentally? Oh, where am I? It's hard to get into all of this stuff. I'm going to move quickly through this story, but I've been reading Lee Smith's book, The Plot Against the President. He talks about how the media, like I said, they're the blob. It's too risky to be that lone journalist who breaks away. It's too risky. And they know it's not, they're not, they don't care what Joe Schmo thinks. Joe Schmo has no power. He just has that ballot every 4 years. Every 2 years if it's a house. And that means nothing when you can steal election. The media, the Beltway, they don't care. They're on TV, they're on MSNBC, they're on CNN because they're preaching to themselves. They're giving the marching orders to themselves. And the marching orders now are ditch Biden. And now they're all allowed to say what they have known for 4 years. They have known it. They have eyes, they can see, they know it's bad, they don't need sources. They're covering for themselves because they want to think they're still honest. For a lot of them, for Jill Abramson there, it's got to just be to make her feel better about herself. I can't imagine anybody would be really thinking that people are that dumb. Lee Smith writes in his book that the media, this is about the Russia hoax, the media is the most important apparatus to control, more important than the deep state or the intelligence agencies, because this is how you shape minds. This is how you shape people's perceptions. This is how you shift thought, is having the media, and they look very credible. They have... five journalists who went to Columbia write their articles, and they have all the sourcing. They have thousands of, they have a huge building in New York City. How could you challenge them? It's the most powerful apparatus to control those thoughts. And Mr. Fleury writes a lot in America Under Attack about how the media is complicit in all of these scandals. And then think about the reporters who do break away. Michael Hastings, he's the one who made the comments about swooning. He's dead. Rosen, I think he worked for the New York Times. And then James Risen worked for Fox News, both spied on by Obama's administration. Associated Press, they had their phone lines tapped by Obama. You can't challenge their narrative if you are in media. Ben Rhodes' comments to David Samuels, the media know nothing. They're a bunch of 20-somethings. They don't have foreign bureaus. They don't do journalism. They don't go and track down the sources. They don't leave the beltway. They will write what we tell them to write in this press room. That's their sourcing. They're too scared and they're incredibly vain. They come up with this excuse to defend themselves. And this is the same media that told you the Russia hoax in 2016, the same media that would deny and persecute anyone that would talk about the election steal in 2020, that told you the Hunter Biden laptop was fake, all of the COVID nonsense, and then the hoax of 2024, Joe Biden is fine, another hoax, and they're forced to admit it's wrong, and then they act like they weren't the ones perpetuating it. Why would anybody believe them? It's all for the Beltway. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the Supreme Court ruling on immunity. I wanted to talk about how this destroys a lot of these cases against Donald Trump. And in a lot of ways, it's not a very groundbreaking decision. The thing that's unusual is that the Democrats are so rabidly going after Donald Trump. And the Supreme Court just said, let's go back to the way things were. Presidential immunity, again, it's been a question that's hasn't been addressed in two centuries, like this court opinion brings out. And they're just pretty much setting it back to the way things were. Everybody agreed that presidential immunity was a thing. It was defining what the limits of it are. And the Supreme Court didn't even do that. They just said, the lower courts haven't done it, and we are not a court of first review. So until a lower judge wants to make that decision, we're not going to rule on it. And then when they do make that decision, they can appeal it again and get it up to the Supreme Court. Again, it's just a masterful way to put off making that decision, to delay it again until after the election. The Supreme Court, they don't have to be in any hurry. They don't have to be driven by politics to get this done. In Manhattan, this immunity ruling, the 34 charges from Alvin Bragg, the hush money case. This, again, we've talked about it earlier this week. Judge Mershon agreeing to push off the sentencing date because the evidence used in this case is protected now by presidential immunity. They've got to review the evidence that they presented to the jury. It might even be that they would have to retry the case. A huge roadblock, something that, I mean, I don't know, maybe he wants to move the sentencing date closer to the election so he could put Trump in jail for, you know, just 2 or 3 months through the election. But that is a huge roadblock for that Manhattan case. The Boxes case in South Florida, these are the 40 charges that Jack Smith brought against him. Again, this immunity ruling pretty much ends that as well, because not only do they have to go through what evidence is classified, what can we even present to a jury now, but now they've got to have separate hearings to determine which pieces of evidence fall under this protection. And the government has to, or Jack Smith has to prove that. And pretty much Trump's lawyers can just keep saying, presidential immunity, that was an official act, can't use that. That's inadmissible. Can't use that. So there's a lot of talk that Jack Smith just has to pretty much ditch that original case and file another round of charges that are more narrow. There's the insurrection case in D.C., Judge Chutkan. This immunity case, there's the Fisher ruling earlier that takes out the obstruction charge, essentially. And then it's the same thing. They wanted to charge him, Donald Trump, for obstruction because he was threatening to fire his attorney general. And the Supreme Court says he can fire him for whatever he wants. That's his subordinate. It's an official act. It's well within his realm to do that. That, again, guts that case. And again, they're saying Jack Smith, he's got to just narrow it down. But again, once you have those delays with having to decide what evidence you can actually admit, it slows the whole thing down. There's no chance a lot of those cases are done before the election. The Georgia case, Fannie Willis, I mean, Fannie and Nathan Wade, they decimated that one on their own, but in the event that it does get brought up again, it's the same thing. Donald Trump can go through all of that evidence and just say, this was in office, it was my conversation between the Attorney General, it was my conversation within my department, that's an official act. I mean, and a huge part of this is that they're trying to use speech to prosecute him. The Supreme Court didn't really change a whole lot in that decision, other than saying, yes, presidential immunity for official acts does exist. What they did was just set up this pretty much this endless cycle of appeals, because even if they do appeal on one of them, if that goes to the Supreme Court, they're probably going to make a very, very narrow decision based only on that piece that was brought before them. I have a lot of things that I wanted to go through on that, or just reading some quotes from the opinion there that Roberts wrote, just talking about, again, how the Supreme Court isn't going to rule on this because the district courts, the lower judges, didn't actually say what constituted as an official act. But I don't have a whole lot of time for that. One other thing that was great in this opinion was Clarence Thomas wrote a concurrence and added that on and just questioned Jack Smith's special counsel shouldn't even exist because he's essentially a private citizen. He talks about how if you're going to be special counsel, that's an executive office. And you can't just create an executive office by fiat. That's what kings do. They just create offices out of thin air and give them to their friends, and there's no Senate confirmation. Jack Smith is never, usually a special counsel at some point in their career, had to have been approved by a Senate confirmation. That's why they're often former attorney generals. Jack Smith has never had that. And Thomas says, you can't just pick a random private citizen and give them the power of the executive branch to not just use that power, but to go after the president of the United States. A lot of people are saying Thomas put in that opinion just so a lot of these lawyers who are fighting for Trump and for a lot of Trump's allies could just copy and paste that into all of their future motions. And maybe that'll get up to the Supreme Court. That it would end Jack Smith's ability to run those special counsels or to run that special counsel. They need to go on offense. It certainly seems like Clarence Thomas is doing that. Well, it is the 4th of July, and I wanted to play a longer version of Donald Trump's speech from July 3rd, 2020. We've played lots of clips from this over the years. But I want to play, I think the entire speech was an hour long. We cut it down to 30 minutes. And you remember the context of that year, the radical left burning down Minneapolis. But on a deeper level, the way they would attack those statues, the way they were attacking the Constitution, the way they were attacking the men whose faces are on Mount Rushmore. This was Donald Trump speaking at Mount Rushmore on July 3rd, 2020. And in that speech, he announced that executive order to create a sculpture garden of American heroes, something that really shouldn't be controversial. They're pulling down statues. We're going to put up more. We're going to celebrate the great men and women of American history. And he had that executive order, and the Democrat-run Congress wouldn't give him money for it. And then Joe Biden, just a few weeks in, decided to revoke that executive order. We can't have a sculpture garden to celebrate America's heroes. But President Trump's one of his best speeches So I wanted to play that for you now for the remainder of this program. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July.
There could be no better place to celebrate America's independence than beneath this magnificent, incredible, majestic mountain and monument to the greatest Americans who have ever lived. Today, we pay tribute to the exceptional lives and extraordinary legacies of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt. I am here as your president to proclaim before the country and before the world, this monument will never be desecrated. These heroes will never be defaced. Their legacy will never, ever be destroyed. Their achievements will never be forgotten. And Mount Rushmore will stand forever as an eternal tribute to our forefathers and to our freedom. We gather tonight to herald the most important day in the history of nations, July 4th, 1776. At those words, every American heart should swell with pride. Every American family should cheer with delight. And every American patriot should be filled with joy because each of you lives in the most magnificent country in the history of the world. And it will soon be greater than ever before. Our founders launched not only a revolution in government, but a revolution in the pursuit of justice, equality, liberty, and prosperity. No nation has done more to advance the human condition than the United States of America. And no people have done more to promote human progress than the citizens of our great nation. It was all made possible by the courage of 56 patriots who gathered in Philadelphia 244 years ago and signed the Declaration of Independence. They enshrined a divine truth that changed the world forever when they said, "All men are created equal." These immortal words set in motion the unstoppable march of freedom. Our founders boldly declared that we are all endowed with the same divine rights given us by our Creator in heaven, and that which God has given us we will allow no one ever to take away, ever. ...1776 represented the culmination of thousands of years of Western civilization and the triumph of not only spirit, but of wisdom, philosophy, and reason. And yet, as we meet here tonight, there is a growing danger that threatens every blessing our ancestors fought so hard for, struggled, they bled to secure. Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children. Angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. Many of these people have no idea why they're doing this, but some know exactly what they are doing. They think the American people are weak and soft and submissive. But no, the American people are strong and proud, and they will not allow our country and all of its values, history, and culture to be taken from them. One of their political weapons is cancel culture, driving people from their jobs, shaming dissenters, and demanding total submission from anyone who disagrees. This is the very definition of totalitarianism, and it is completely alien to our culture and to our values, and it has absolutely no place in the United States of America. This attack on our liberty, our magnificent liberty, must be stopped, and it will be stopped very quickly. We will expose this dangerous movement, protect our nation's children, end this radical assault, and preserve our beloved American way of life. In our schools, our newsrooms, even our corporate boardrooms, there is a new far-left fascism that demands absolute allegiance. If you do not speak its language, perform its rituals, recite its mantras, and follow its commandments, then you will be censored, banished, blacklisted, persecuted, and punished. It's not going to happen to us. Make no mistake, this left-wing cultural revolution is designed to overthrow the American Revolution. In so doing, they would destroy the very civilization that rescued billions from poverty, disease, violence, and hunger, and that lifted humanity to new heights of achievement, discovery, and progress. To make this possible, they are determined to tear down every statue, symbol, and memory of our national heritage. Our people have a great memory. They will never forget the destruction of statues and monuments to George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, abolitionists, and many others. The violent mayhem we have seen in the streets and cities that are run by liberal Democrats in every case is the predictable result of years of extreme indoctrination and bias in education, journalism, and other cultural institutions. Against every law of society and nature, our children are taught in school to hate their own country and to believe that the men and women who built it were not heroes, but that were villains. The radical view of American history is a web of lies. All perspective is removed. Every virtue is obscured. Every motive is twisted. Every fact is distorted. And every flaw is magnified until the history is purged and the record is disfigured beyond all recognition. This movement is openly attacking the legacies of every person on Mount Rushmore. They defile the memory of Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. Today, we will set history and history's records straight. Before these figures were immortalized in stone, they were American giants in full flesh and blood, gallant men whose intrepid deeds unleashed the greatest leap of human advancement the world has ever known. Tonight I will tell you, and most importantly, the youth of our nation, the true stories of these great, great men. From head to toe, George Washington represented the strength, grace, and dignity of the American people. From a small volunteer force of citizen farmers, he created the Continental Army out of nothing and rallied them to stand against the most powerful military on earth. Through 8 long years, through the brutal winter at Valley Forge, through setback after setback on the field of battle, he led those patriots to ultimate triumph. When the army had dwindled to a few thousand men at Christmas of 1776, when defeat seemed absolutely certain, he took what remained of his forces on a daring nighttime crossing of the Delaware River. They marched through 9 miles of frigid darkness, many without boots on their feet, leaving a trail of blood in the snow. In the morning, they seized victory at Trenton. After forcing the surrender of the most powerful empire on the planet, at Yorktown, General Washington did not claim power, but simply returned to Mount Vernon as a private citizen. When called upon again, he presided over the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia and was unanimously elected our first president. When he stepped down after 2 terms, his former adversary, King George, called him the greatest man of the age. He remains first in our hearts to this day. For as long as Americans love this land, we will honor and cherish the father of our country, George Washington. He will never be removed, abolished, and most of all, he will never be forgotten. Thomas Jefferson, the great Thomas Jefferson, was 33 years old when he traveled north to Pennsylvania and brilliantly authored one of the greatest treasures of human history, the Declaration of Independence. He also drafted Virginia's Constitution and conceived and wrote the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, a model for our cherished First Amendment. After serving as the first Secretary of State and then Vice President, he was elected to the presidency. He ordered American warriors to crush Barbary pirates. He doubled the size of our nation with the Louisiana Purchase. And he sent the famous explorers Lewis and Clark into the West on a daring expedition to the Pacific Ocean. He was an architect, an inventor, a diplomat, a scholar, the founder of one of the world's great universities, and an ardent defender of liberty. Americans will forever admire the author of American freedom, Thomas Jefferson. Yeah. And he too will never, ever be abandoned by us. Abraham Lincoln, the savior of our Union, was a self-taught country lawyer who grew up in a log cabin on the American frontier. The first Republican president, he rose to high office from obscurity based on a force and clarity of his anti-slavery convictions, very, very strong convictions. He signed the law that built the Transcontinental Railroad. He signed the Homestead Act, given to some incredible scholars as simply defined ordinary citizens free land to settle anywhere in the American West. And he led the country through the darkest hours of American history, giving every ounce of strength that he had to ensure that government of the people, by the people, and for the people did not perish from this earth. He served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Armed Forces during our bloodiest war, the struggle that saved our Union and extinguished the evil of slavery. Over 600,000 died in that war. More than 20,000 were killed or wounded in a single day in Antietam. At Gettysburg, 157 years ago, the Union bravely withstood an assault of nearly 15,000 men and threw back Pickett's charge. Lincoln won the Civil War. He issued the Emancipation Proclamation. He led the passage of the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery for all time. And ultimately, his determination to preserve our nation and our Union cost him his life. For as long as we live, Americans will uphold and revere the immortal memory of President Abraham Lincoln. Theodore Roosevelt exemplified the unbridled confidence of our national culture and identity. He saw the towering grandeur of America's mission in the world, and he pursued it with overwhelming energy and zeal. As a lieutenant colonel during the Spanish-American War, he led the famous Rough Riders to defeat the enemy at San Juan Hill. He cleaned up corruption as police commissioner of New York City, then served as the governor of New York, vice president, and at 42 years old, became the youngest ever president of the United States. He sent our great new naval fleet around the globe to announce America's arrival as a world power. He gave us many of our national parks, including the Grand Canyon. He oversaw the construction of the awe-inspiring Panama Canal, and he is the only person ever awarded both the Nobel Peace Prize and the Congressional Medal of Honor. He was American freedom personified in full. The American people will never relinquish the bold, beautiful, and untamed spirit of Theodore Roosevelt. No movement that seeks to dismantle these treasured American legacies can possibly have a love of America at its heart. Can't happen. No person who remains quiet at the destruction of this resplendent heritage can possibly lead us to a better future. The radical ideology attacking our country advances under the banner of social justice. But in truth, it would demolish both justice and society. It would transform justice into an instrument of division and vengeance, and it would turn our free and inclusive society into a place of repression, domination, and exclusion. They want to silence us, but we will not be silenced. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We will state the truth in full without apology. We declare that the United States of America is the most just and exceptional nation ever to exist on Earth. We are proud of the fact that our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and we understand that these values have dramatically advanced the cause of peace and justice throughout the world. We know that the American family is the bedrock of American life. We recognize the solemn right and moral duty of every nation to secure its borders. And we are building the wall. We remember that governments exist to protect the safety and happiness of their own people. A nation must care for its own citizens first. We must take care of America first. It's time. We believe in equal opportunity, equal justice, and equal treatment for citizens of every race, background, religion, and creed. Every child of every color, born and unborn, is made in the holy image of God. We want free and open debate, not speech codes and cancel culture. We embrace tolerance, not prejudice. We support the courageous men and women of law enforcement. We will never abolish our police or our great Second Amendment, which gives us the right to keep and bear arms. We believe that our children should be taught to love their country, honor their history, and respect our great American flag. We stand tall, we stand proud, and we only kneel to Almighty God. This is who we are. This is what we believe. And these are the values that will guide us as we strive to build an even better and greater future. Those who seek to erase our heritage want Americans to forget our pride and our great dignity so that we can no longer understand ourselves or America's destiny. In toppling the heroes of 1776, they seek to dissolve the bonds of love and loyalty that we feel for our country and that we feel for each other. Their goal is not a better America. Their goal is to end America. In its place, they want power for themselves. But just as patriots did in centuries past, the American people will stand in their way, and we will win, and win quickly and with great dignity. We will never let them rip America's heroes from our monuments or from our hearts. By tearing down Washington and Jefferson, these radicals would tear down the very heritage for which men gave their lives to win the Civil War. They would erase the memory that inspired those soldiers to go to their deaths, singing these words of the battle hymn of the Republic. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free, while God is marching on. They would tear down the principles that propelled the abolition of slavery and ultimately around the world, ending an evil institution that had plagued humanity for thousands and thousands of years. Our opponents would tear apart the very documents that Martin Luther King used to express his dream and the ideas that were the foundation of the righteous movement for civil rights. They would tear down the beliefs, culture, and identity that have made America the most vibrant and tolerant society in the history of the earth. My fellow Americans, it is time to speak up loudly and strongly and powerfully and defend the integrity of our country. It is time for our politicians to summon the bravery and determination of our American ancestors. It is time. It is time to plant our flag and to protect the greatest of this nation for citizens of every race, in every city, and every part of this glorious land. For the sake of our honor, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our union, we must protect and preserve our history, our heritage, and our great heroes. Here tonight, before the eyes of our forefathers, Americans declare again, as we did 244 years ago, that we will not be tyrannized, we will not be demeaned, and we will not be intimidated by bad, evil people. It will not happen. We will proclaim the ideals of the Declaration of Independence And we will never surrender the spirit and the courage and the cause of July 4th, 1776.